You are listening to Up to Me Radio, the best in inspirational talk radio. It's up to me.
Amara Gay.
I get a call
my brother tells me that my mother passed away. She had congestive heart failure. She had been sick since her 40s. She had acquired a congestive heart failure in her 40s. And
your mother was only
52 years
right?
old. She was 52 years old. And so she passed away the week before Christmas this particular year. It happened to be a blizzard in Chicago. I'm from Terre Haute, Indiana, so it was a three-hour drive on Highway 41, and the storm followed us there, and the interstate got shut down. So because it was right before Christmas, we couldn't have the funeral right before Christmas. Nobody wanted to have the funeral, obviously, on Christmas Eve or Christmas Day, so we buried her December 26th, and that particular day after this horrible week of bad weather, it was unseasonably warm that day. And I remember people saying, you just buried your mom, you should stay in Terre Haute one more night. And I'm like, no way. I want to go home, cry in my own bed, in my own pillow, because I'm grieving my mom. And I've been stuck in Terre Haute for a week, waiting on us to be able to have her homegoing service. And when I walked into my house, it looked like Niagara Falls was coming out of my ceiling. Apparently, while we were away for a week in Terre Haute, this winter storm had knocked out the power, and my pipes in my house had frozen and burst in three places. And so on the day that I buried my mom, I lost my house. It was a brand new house. We had just had it built. My husband and I had just had it built 3 years prior. And so not only did it destroy the house, but all of our personal possessions as well. So the house had to be ripped out down to the studs and rebuilt. I had a newborn baby. Well, she wasn't newborn, but she was one. She was a toddler. And so my baby and my husband and I moved into a hotel for 7 weeks.
Wow. At Christmas.
Yeah.
Christmas, New Year.
Right.
Keep that in mind.
Yeah. I spent New Year's in this hotel. Yeah. And so for the 7 weeks we were in the hotel, I don't remember much. I remember functioning, and I remember just loads of people, you know, looking at me with compassion and people just doing various different things to try to help us through this horrible time. And, of course, we had about a dozen people that said, don't go in a hotel. Come stay with us. You can stay with us. But the problem with that is that I lost my mom. And I'd lost my house, and I'd lost all of my possessions. And so if I'm living in your house and you say good morning, I might not want to extend a common courtesy of saying good morning back to you. And I don't want to be rude to you in your house, but I needed time to try to process and ascertain what was happening. So I needed my own private space.
Yeah.
So we chose to stay in a hotel. But the people were just amazing. You know, our friends would say, okay, you're going to stay in a hotel, but give me your laundry and we're going to take care of your laundry for you. We had people to say, okay, I'm taking Tuesdays, I'm taking Wednesdays, I'm taking Mondays. We're going to provide home cooked meals for you.
So where did the title of the book come from?
Okay. Yeah. So let's get there. Do you want me to tell how I got to the book or just the title of
Let's
the book?
Let's just start with the title because I'm going to unpack some of the chat. I want to make sure they get
sure.
a lot of these. You've got so many great stories.
All right.
I really want you guys to hear this.
Okay, so the title of the book, my mother had learned that she was terminally ill right when I found out. So, okay. It gets really deep, but I'll just say this. December 19th, the year before
2007,
I found out I was expecting. And I couldn't wait to tell my mom because I had tried to conceive for 2 years and thought that I wasn't possibly going to be able to have a child. And so I couldn't wait to tell her it was Christmas time. I kind of surprised her with the news as a Christmas present. And thinking that she was going to be ecstatic, I saw a look of dread on her face, and I didn't understand why that look. you know, it just didn't make sense to me, but
it didn't fit your joy.
Yeah, I kind of like pressed it down and just continued to be happy and smile, but I didn't understand why she wasn't celebrating. It was only a few months later that I learned that she had been diagnosed with congestive heart failure. Not that it was a terminal diagnosis at that point, but her heart was supposed to be the size of a fist. Your heart is supposed to be the size of a fist. Hers was swelled to the size of a grapefruit. And the heart was in such poor condition, it was causing her kidneys to fail as well. And so because it was, when you have dialysis, dialysis is very rigorous on the heart. So it was like a catch-22 to give her that dialysis was going to expedite her heart condition. So one of the two was going to take her out, and the doctors didn't know which. So they said, you know, more than likely she's going to pass within 6 months. So she didn't think that she was going to live long enough to be able to meet my unborn child. So that's why she was sad when I told her, because she immediately thought, I won't be here to celebrate this birth of this baby. But it becomes a good fight of faith for her to will her life to be extended so that she can meet the grandbaby. And she actually lived until she was 15 months old.
Mm. Wow. Wow. And so that book got birthed out of her losing her mom, of course, as she was realizing that she was conceiving this child.
That is correct.
Claudia, in general, the thing that I have come to know about her for sure, she has the unique ability to not only parlay pain into purpose, but she's so selfless with her gifts. She has used everything that she has, from writing stories of hope and inspiration to seeking out people that she can showcase in order to show God's grace and God's mercy. And this is a woman who, at the age of three, you were six. At the age of six or seven,
right,
she experienced what I would call her first real trauma.
Sure.
She was living in Indiana,
mm-hmm,
and playing with some of her siblings. And we won't give you the whole story, but I want you to kind of just understand some of what took place. And then I'm going to fast forward them to the meeting of the gentleman with the tombstone.
Oh, sure. Right.
So I'm going to give you a snippet. She'll give you the heart of it, and then we'll fast forward. So when she was about six or seven, playing with her other siblings, her mom was in the house asleep. She was outside. Some of the older siblings went to pick some mulberry, was it?
Correct.
Mulberry. Mm-hmm. And so she and her little sister, who was then two, Kalila. Mm-hmm. They sat on top of her mom's car.
Right.
Well, when the other siblings came back, they didn't have enough mulberry, so Claudia being who Claudia is, she wanted her own mulberry. So she figured, I'm just going to go across the street. But she knew it wasn't the kind of street that you're supposed to cross. So they sit the little sister on top of the car. Claudia goes to pick the mulberries. And then as she's coming back across the street, this beautiful car is coming down the street, so much so that it catches her attention. She's looking at the car, watching it. And then all of a sudden, she sees her little sister go up in the air, get hit by this car, and get hit again. And then, as I believe it, she rolled
right
down the street.
Right.
She's six. The amount of guilt she felt behind being the person to, you know, want to bring the little sister outside
right
was something that took a long time to heal from. And she did heal. Because one of the things that you are really great at doing, Claudia, and I admire it, is Claudia finds when there's a challenge, when there's an obstacle, when something seems hopeless, she serves. She pours that hurt, she pours that heartache, she pours that disappointment into someone else in a positive way. She's like, okay, if this is my rock bottom, if this is my downside, then how can I make somebody's day? How can I bring joy to somebody's life? How can I increase somebody's financial devastation? And so that's just the way she is. And I'm sure that even at 6 years old when this happened, something clicked in her to say, there's got to be a better way. There's got to be some way to deal with this pain, this emotional trauma that occurred. And then fast forward, share with them how you ended up meeting, you know, let me back up. The person that hit your sister.
Yes.
It was a hit and run.
Correct.
You never stopped.
Right.
So give them some snippets of what happened when it was a hit and run, and then fast forward us up to how you met.
Yes.
What was his name, Kevin?
Steven.
Steven.
Yes. Okay. We lived in the projects, okay? I grew up poor, and I have several siblings, and none of us have the same father. So I believe that there was a determination of value that was placed on the life of my sister. Because the man that didn't stop was not our race, and he came from a middle class social economic background, if you will. And the police, you know, because you don't make a determination for yourself not to be arrested. He left the scene of the accident. He later came back and turned himself into authorities. And it was always told to my mother by the authorities that he left the scene of the accident because he thought he hit a dog. And so, therefore, it was excused. And he was not even ticketed, and there was no charges filed. And my sister, she died instantly. And so I recall it being a warm summer afternoon, and I remember not wanting to tell my mom. I didn't want to go in the house and tell her that my sister had been hit. So I remember my older sister going in and telling her, and she frantically coming outside and the neighbors coming and they're getting a lawn chair. And I remember the neighbor trying to console my mother saying, you know, she's just unconscious. You know, she's just unconscious. So they were thinking, okay, as soon as the paramedics arrive, they're going to revive her. She's been knocked unconscious. Everything's fine. She's going to live. And I just will never forget when the paramedics came and they pronounced that baby dead, my mom just doing back bends, like almost like a backward flip, because she would thrust her body all the way back and just scream these blood-curling screams. And she just did that over and over, just flipped her body back, screaming. And nobody could, you couldn't console her, you couldn't hold her, because she just kept doing these backhand thrusts. And I remember the whole yard being full of people and media and lights, and it, you know, dark had fallen on us. And I just stayed away, you know, because I was thinking, oh my God, like as soon as somebody turns around and sees me, they're gonna like, oh, this is the person that's responsible, because you know, she was picking berries with her. Nobody ever found me to blame me. And the person that was actually responsible was never charged. The community came after my mom after some time. You know, everybody was, of course, consoling her that night. It would be months later when people were starting to look for who to blame for the loss of this adorable 2-year-old little girl. And it was like, well, she lives in the projects, and she has all these babies, and they all have different dads. And
how many siblings do you have?
I have 5.
Okay.
Yeah. And so then it was like a judgment of, well, you know, this is God's will. She couldn't take care of those kids anyway. She was fornicating, and this child was born out of wedlock. So this was her consequence for being a backslider. You know, these are all of the things that some of the people, quite frankly, from the church, had said to my mother in order to try to get her to reconcile with her sinful ways. This was the way that they were rebuking her nature of sex out of marriage.
And I want to just dive in for a quick second. It's so unfortunate when condemnation and
yes.
judgment, when the only judge is Abba Father. But here it is, this woman, devastated at the loss of a child who was hit by a hit-and-run driver.
Correct.
dealing with that while still having to raise the other children.
Correct.
And now the place that used to be your safe haven, the church and the church people, you know, caused her a deeper, a greater wound. It is what I find such a blessing. Claudia's faith wasn't shaken as a result of that. You know, you can have that kind of trauma as a kid and witness your mom go through that kind of trauma as a young girl and as a teenager, and this affected your mother greatly. And
yeah.
this is the major reason why at 52, you know, these were the seeds that ended up growing into this sickness.
Correct.
And Claudia's faith wasn't shaken as a result of that. And so I want to encourage you, and I'm going to let her get back to the story, but I want to encourage you. You don't know how strong you are until you have witnessed something that traumatic, and it still gives you a confidence in God, knowing that God didn't cause it, God didn't do it, and that it wasn't your fault. No matter what you were doing or where you were at, it was not your fault. And to trust him and depend on him even more, because the word talks about, and you know my favorite phrase, count it all joy when you fall into divers temptation. When there's a problem, when there's a challenge, you count it all joy. And in order to count it all joy, that means you got to let something be added to you. To count is an addition game. So you add some patience. You add a different trust in God. You add a different faith and a belief in God. And that's pretty much what has transpired over Claudia's life. So take them back to that space that you were. I just wanted to get in there to kind of let them know what took place, because this is a result of all of those traumas. Instead of being bitter, Claudia has gotten better.
Later on in life, I got better. I definitely had my own, bumps in the road. After that trauma took place, my mother backslid. You know, because we were there. I was born and raised in the church. I say that that's the thing that my mom did really well, is that she taught me to know Jesus early in life. And so even when she strayed, I found my way back, you know. But I remember when she backslid, I was relieved, because I was like, good, because we go to church too much. we was at church all the time. So I was grateful for the break. But, you know, when you're not connected to the vine, you fall astray. And so I had my own bouts growing up, making very poor choices, and found myself in an abusive relationship with a boyfriend. And it was that relationship that was my surrender, because I was like, okay, well, you know what? I think he's going to kill me. Mm. So how about this? How about God? If you can allow me to escape the wrath of this man, I think I would rather dedicate my life to you, because he's about to take it. Mm. And so that was my surrender to the Lord, like, get me away from him. Mm. And that's when I never looked back, because I was delivered. Like, I was delivered.
Hallelujah.
From an abusive relationship. And I started to see the hand of God, just one miracle after another. So I never had to be the person that would go to church and hear what the pastor said to try to see where that fit in my life.
Because you lived. You were at death's door.
I already saw the hand of God. So nobody had to convince me of the goodness and mercy and the grace. I already had that before I ever got in the church. So I've always been one person that I can hear a message and be objective about it, because I know Christ for myself and I know the word for myself, and I can hear something that seems questionable and not judge the pastor for it, because I know he's human just like me.
Amen.
So if he says something that seems a little off that day, it's like it doesn't
rock the core of your faith.
It doesn't hurt my walk.
You are firmly rooted.
That's right.
And if more believers would be firmly rooted, but you got to know and study the word for yourself in order to know when something's off. And then more importantly, know that when someone's delivering or explaining a message, that they're explaining it from their vantage point based on the things that they've lived through. And if you can color that with what you know the word to be, it shouldn't rock you. You shouldn't have a problem come up and then all of a sudden you want to leave God because something happened at a church, or something happened with somebody in the church.
Sure.
People in the church ain't running me out of the church. Hold up now. I need to ask you guys, if you have a comment or a question that you'd like to ask Claudia, or if you'd like to ask me, please feel free to call in. The phone number is 347-324-5246. Press 1 to be entered in the queue. Again, that is 347-324-5246. Press 1. We're going to take a real brief pause for the cause, and then when we come back on the other side, we're going to dive into some of the present things, because she's got some amazing things going on in her life, two amazing girls that I adore, and a fabulous husband, and we want to let you experience more of the nuggets that Claudia Parker has to share. You're listening to Mara Gail on OMG, the Omara Gail Radio Show, where my special guest today is none other than Claudia Parker. We'll be right back in about 30 minutes.
I wasn't prepared to be a caregiver to mom. I had no idea how hard it would be and what I would need to know. Things I never thought of, like how to improve her mood and ways for me to stay positive. Luckily, I found the Caregiving Resource Center from AARP. It had articles about the basics, but also information about the hurdles I was facing. Caregiving Resource Center at aarp.org/caregiving. Articles, tips, and tools to help you both care for your loved one and care for yourself. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to OMG, the Omara Gail Radio Show. I'm your host, Mara Gail. And, of course, my special guest today is none other than Claudia Parker. And we were talking about her book, you know, Becoming a Mom While Losing Your Own. Mm-hmm. And we also brought you guys through the story of the tragic loss of her little sister when she was 2 years old. Mm-hmm. Claudia was 6, going on 7. And what that journey led her through, as well as the trauma that it caused her mom. And then fast forward, she was in an abusive relationship,
right,
later in life. And and when she escaped that, she clung tight to God, and she hasn't let him go.
That is correct.
She has been holding on to him ever since. So, Claudia, how long have you been married?
I've been married for 16 years.
16 years. And that is to Dr. Don Parker. That's her husband. And they have two amazing, precious, and beautiful little girls. So share a little bit of a story, because this is another one of the things that I adore about you. Both of her children are amazing. They're very loving. They give me syrupy hugs and kisses. When I see them, as you can probably tell right now, because I just light up like a Christmas tree, they overwhelm me with the love, the kind of love that they have to give. And that means that they're in a safe environment. When kids are in a safe environment, when they feel safe enough to love, because they are loved, they can extend that. And her children have extended that love to me. I would like to, in particular, ask about, or let you share with our listeners, about Rhonda Renee.
Sure.
Because Rhonda Renee is just my doll baby. I love both of her children, but I want you to hear this unique story and how Claudia has been able to parlay what some people may get discouraged about into a wonderful, teachable, bright light bulb kind of moment. So, please.
Yeah, okay. So, you know, we talked about me already having a child when my mom passed away. My oldest daughter was 1. And so 3 years later, we gave birth to our second daughter. And then my mom's name is Rhonda. So we named my second daughter Rhonda Renee after my mom. And my stepmom's name is Renee. So that's why she has two first names. She's named after both my moms. Okay, so it was about, I remember the first time I noticed something different about Rhonda Renee. I was nursing her, and I was in the glider, and I was just bonding with her. So I remember having my pinky finger, and I was just kind of, you know how the baby's hands will kind of be curled up. And so I remember just kind of doing like this, just kind of meddling with her fingers. And I noticed one of them just didn't seem like it would extend out. And so I thought, that's odd. Like, it just seemed like it was staying in a fixed position. That was the very first thing I noticed. I took her to the doctor, and she had a tight tendon, and it was keeping her finger almost like in a deformed position. And they just said it was a tendon release, and that if we just had a tiny little do a little surgical snap, that we could extend it out, and it would cause her fingers to extend, and you know, she would get better use out of her hand. So we had that done because, again, we saw an abnormality and we wanted to correct it. We wanted to fix her. So that was the first thing I noticed that was different about her. And so I started, and that was like, she was like 3 weeks old. That was when I noticed that. We had the surgery maybe 6 months in, but I just was paying attention to her after that. And I started to notice other things that I found to be different or peculiar. And I would bring things up to the pediatrician and they would say, oh, it's fine. And everything would be brushed off. And I remember becoming more and more concerned as she grew older, like her crawl was different and the size of her head seemed different. And I was pouring myself into her as I had done my older child. And she just didn't seem to be grasping the way that my older child was. And people would say, you're comparing, stop comparing. And so because I was still, and you know, new in the parenting phase, I listened with one ear, but I still had my own internal intuition that something seemed off with the second baby. So finally, I said to the pediatrician when she was one, she was 12 months old, I said, at what point are you going to pay more attention to what I'm saying? At what point are we going to look into this? And she said, oh, at 15 months. At 15 months, if she doesn't seem to be, you know, communicating more, or she doesn't seem to be catching up with her developmental milestones, then we'll have her evaluated. 15 months to the day, I invited early intervention into my home. They brought 5 therapists to do an evaluation, and they all looked at me with gloom on their faces, and it was like nobody wanted to be the first person to talk.
Yeah.
And I just remember them saying, yeah, we share your concerns. So she was 50% delayed globally, from speech to physical therapy, from cognitive ability, developmental, everything. So they said, okay, this is going to be the plan. We're going to come in here every day. Every therapist had a different day, and they would spend an hour with her, and it was like I had a plethora of therapy, and we did that for, I don't know, about 6 months, and then we did another evaluation, and wow, she had made progress. She still hadn't gotten up. In my mind, I'm thinking, well, you're going to come in, and you're going to do all this therapy, and then I'm going to implement what you've done when
you guys leave,
and she's going to be fine, right, because we're going to fix her.
Yeah.
And then when therapy just didn't seem like it was doing anything, of course, then you must be ineffective. So you're fired, and you're fired. And so we did that, the Donald Trump thing. And then, of course, the next thing I was told is, well, why don't you get a social worker? And the social worker can tell you about all the different resources available. Maybe we just need to get a new therapy team in here. And so that's what I did. I got a social worker, and that social worker changed my life forever. Because the social worker said, instead of just getting a new therapy team, we should start getting genetic testing.
Okay.
And the genetic testing, what happens is you get the first genetic test, and if that comes back normal, then your insurance is justified to allow you to keep getting them. So we did 3 genetic tests. They all came back normal. Clearly we knew something was not normal about a child that was 50% delayed in every category. So finally we had something called whole exome sequencing. It's like the Mac Daddy of all genetic tests. It takes my DNA, my husband's, as well as hers. We have to even sign waivers that there might be something that comes back that you weren't looking for, so you need to be prepared for that. I was like, oh, Lord Jesus, no surprises. So after we had that test done, it's analyzed by the Baylor College of Medicine, and 12 different genetic doctors analyzed the data from this. And it came back that Rhonda Renee has something called a FOXP1 mutation. And the FOXP1 and FOXP2 genes are responsible for our human ability to communicate. That gene in Rhonda Renee is mutated. So it's causing her to have a severe language impairment called apraxia. And apraxia, I would liken it to a person who has had a stroke. And they understand language, they know how to communicate, but the neurological damage from that stroke is impairing their oral muscle movement to form words for them to be able to speak intelligibly, whenever it's been a severe stroke. So that is, her communication is kind of muzzled like that. She has been receiving therapy since she was 18 months old, and now she's 8 years old. So she does have some language now. But in addition to the severe language, she also has a lot of what I would call autistic characteristics. She's not diagnosed as autistic, but there's a lot of tendencies that she has that are similar to a child with autism. She has a little bit of OCD. She has to have a certain schedule. She's a little tactile defensive. She has a sensory processing disorder. So she seeks vestibular input. In order for her brain to be able to function to where she can understand things, she has to get vestibular input. Or so that would be
vestibular input.
Vestibular. Yeah. So that is when you, the sensation that you get from spinning or an impact. So she has to jump or run or spin or swing. So we spend a lot of time at the park,
right,
or at carnivals,
right,
or I have a trampoline in my house,
yes,
in the basement,
yes.
The swing set out back. Those are all therapy resources for us because she does not have the ability to sit still and attend a task if she needs that vestibular input and she's not getting it.
Right. I want to jump in because there's a couple of things that I want to kind of unpack that I've witnessed in your family.
Sure.
As a result of this, and part of why I believe this testimony is so important, your family has shined a light on this diagnosis, if you will, in a way that has, I mean, I've literally cried at some of the videos that Claudia Parker Portraits has produced about her daughter. And your other daughter, she's an author in her own right. She has a book out called The Kindergarten Preach.
Children's Church with a Preschool
Pastor. Children's
Church
with a Preschool Pastor. This young girl, she's Danae, how old?
11 now.
11. She preaches at churches. I mean, not just kids' churches. She preaches at churches all over. And she preaches with such conviction and such power in the word. Well, one of the beautiful things about the Parker family in general is even Danae has taken this plight to educate people to not stare at her sister or to not judge her sister or to not think her sister isn't as special as she is because she may not be able to communicate in the same way.
Right.
And I just find that to be such a precious, precious testimony to what a big sister can do for a little sister, but more importantly, what a compassionate being can do to educate others about what is a common everyday story in your household.
Right.
But when people see someone, they look and they judge or they make a face or they make a comment,
right,
and you don't know how deep it cuts, and you don't know, it's not like you can say, you know, it's not like I got on an ugly sweater and you're frowning at the sweater and I can take it off. This is not something that's going to go away.
Right.
And so it is a daily life struggle, challenge, opportunity,
sure,
to rise above every single day.
Right.
And so one of the other things that because one of my girlfriends, Kim, who actually just chimed in, her son, you described her son.
Oh.
And so she was very grateful that someone, you know, not that someone else has the same situation, but there's comfort in knowing you're not alone.
Sure.
You are not alone. And there's somebody that has the testimony that houses what you need to just be encouraged in today. And so share a little bit about how you've been able to produce this content, basically, storytelling, in a very vivid way, you know, from Ron to Renee to other people's lives, and then we're going to parlay because we only have about 20 minutes more with you.
Okay.
I want to be able to talk about 5 minutes of faith, your newest baby.
Sure.
But I want to go into 5 minutes of faith coming out of the fact that you would tell these stories about Rhonda Renee, and you celebrate their birthdays in such an awesome, extravagant fashion that allows people to be drawn into their life in a very personable way.
Mm-hmm.
So please share with our listeners that. And again, I want to remind you, if you have any questions or comments, you can call in. The phone number is 347-324-5246. Press 1 to be entered into the queue. Go right ahead.
Okay, so I have two things I want to tell you. The first one is the social worker. When I said she changed my life, she didn't just change my life because she told us that we need to get genetic testing or that she helped us get a therapy team that we felt really comfortable with that helped Rhonda Renee to live up to the potential that she was at that particular phase in her life. She did all that, but more so, she counseled me. And there's a lot of people that feel uncomfortable about sharing their heart with a social worker. You know, because we're Christians, we pray to God, and you know,
there's a stigma.
To the church pastor or to the council in church, but there is a precious benefit in somebody that is clinically trained.
Unlike your hairstylist. Else's hand.
She counseled me. She would come to my home once a week or 90 minutes or 6 months straight.
Mm.
And sometimes she would just look at me and she would say, okay, so you're having a day. And I'd be like, are you? Like I would just have a moment. And, you know, because I am not the type of person that likes to suppress. And so I didn't want to be a suppressor, but you know, sometimes we as girlfriends, we dump on each other. That's not appropriate because sometimes the weight that we're holding is too heavy for other people to be able to have to bear. You're experiencing joy in your life. And here I come with my luggage. And, you know, then you got people feeling like they can't even celebrate because you're so fragile and delicate. No, I needed to have counsel with the professional so that I could be in my right mind, so that I could be the wife, the mother, and the friend that I can be to the person I need to be to the world.
Yes.
So the counsel that she gave me, and she would recognize my pain, she knew I needed an outlet for it. I started running marathons. I couldn't just run, y'all. Like, I had to run 26.2 miles. Because that's how much aggression that I needed to get out in a healthy way. Now, not so much. I don't need to run 26.2 miles anymore. 2-3 miles is good. But when I was in a lot of pain, that's what I needed.
Yeah.
And then the other thing that she did outside of encouraging me to find a healthy outlet is she recognized that I had a gift to write. I'd already written the book, but that was the first thing that I had ever published, which I published independently. But besides writing in a church beacon, I hadn't published nothing. So, but she recognized that I had a gift to write, so she started to share with me. There's a magazine in Chicago called Special Parent. There's a Chicago Parent magazine, and then there's another one called Special Parent. And so she encouraged me to send a submission about what I felt about being a mother of a special needs child. And so I got published in that magazine. And from there, I started doing submissions to other media circuits, employed by a reputable newspaper as a reporter, who then hired me as a columnist. And I worked for that paper almost 6 years. And so recently, actually this past April, was my last article, the investors of the paper were going in a different direction, and they wanted me to do less commentary and more news stories. And my heart wasn't to do new. I don't want to do politics and crime. I just want to share feel-good stories. So I was laid off from the paper, and after that, I just you know, I was like, Lord, I miss my column. I miss sharing writing and sharing people's stories. And, you know, I'm a journalist at heart. So, you know, I really wanted to stay with the paper, but I didn't have a choice. I was let go. So the Lord said, you are still a journalist. You know, just use the lens of your camera. And so then I came up with, it's a wonderful story. I'd love to share this really fast, but I had someone contacted me and asked me to come and speak at a school, and that's not unusual. I get offers to speak often, but I said to her, okay, tell me what day, what time, and what time am I allotted to speak? And she said 5 minutes, and I was like, 5 minutes, like, that's a first. Like, normally I get 30 minutes to speak, but 5 minutes, I said, I've never been able to share my story in 5 minutes before. I don't know how to share a testimony. She says, well, it's a career day, so you are going to be with several other parents that are going to come and talk about their career. And I said, well, talking about your occupation is very different than sharing your testimony. Yes. And sharing your story. So I was going to decline. I just didn't think that I could do it in 5 minutes, but the Lord stopped me. The Holy Spirit spoke to me and was like, yeah, don't decline. You may not be able to get up and verbally share your story in a lecture in 5 minutes, but perhaps you can do it in a video. So I created my own little montage of my own story, my own testimony that normally would take me 30 minutes to share, and I put it in a video. And then I played that for the school, and then the students just, like, surrounded me afterwards. And I thought, oh, wow, I never realized something so short.
There was a power in telling stories.
Correct.
In a way that visually stimulated the kid.
Yes.
That's the timeline that she was asked to do.
Correct.
But was also comfortable for you.
Yes.
Because sharing a testimony that you know would take 30 to 40 minutes or
right.
20 minutes minimum – and trying to compact that in 5 minutes, you have to become creative. And you already have to get to writing.
Right.
And storytelling.
Sure.
So you just decided to put pictures with the story that enabled you to meet the timeline.
Yeah.
Inspire and encourage the kids.
Correct.
And still be satisfied.
Yeah.
By telling the story, being a testimony.
Because I realized, oh my gosh, it's all there. Like, you know. And so then I thought, oh, what if I could do that with other people? Because I had a column, and I loved sharing other people's stories on my platform as a columnist. And I was like, I bet I could change my column into a documentary. So how about keep the same timeline, but only share stories that were God-honoring testimonies? 5 minutes of faith. And that's how that came about, 5 minutes of faith.
5 minutes of faith. And I'm super excited. Claudia has been doing, this is your, how many have you done?
I've been doing it. So I was let go in April, and then I took 3 months to hear from God, and I started my first one in July. So I produced one show a month. Every first Sunday they
so
air.
July, August, September, October.
And
she's
then,
done four. I thought it was
yeah.
about four. She's done four so far,
Mars
and
will be five.
I will be her fifth show
it's
in November.
It's really good. Oh, my God.
In November, I peel off my Band-Aid, and I allow you to see my scars, cuts, and bruises. You get to see my insides. It's called My Rock Bottom Had a Rainbow, because I believe that everybody, you know, if you, it's your perspective. You know, you can stay looking at your downward moments, your depressing moments, your challenging moments. You can stay focused on that. Or you can just look up. It's so simple. It seems so simple. It almost
right.
sounds like a cliche. Just look up.
Right.
But it's like when I look up and I see that my daddy has great plans for me, when I see that he knew me before I was formed in my mother's womb, so no matter what takes place in my life, my daddy's got me. And when I realize, even in the moment of despair or hopelessness, if that's what I happen to be feeling, that he will use that and turn it around for my good. God doesn't waste one drop, Claudia.
Right.
Isn't that how awesome? I mean, to have that as a reality for us, to know that not one situation in your past from your little sister and your mom and all this, and the broken relationship with the abusive relationship to
right,
now
right.
having a man who loves her like Christ
yes.
loves the church.
So
he's amazing. And so and the things that we live through, if you don't let them break you become a testimony to somebody else to help them when they're going through. And so there's stuff for us to share. There's things for you to share with people, because that's how God parlays your pain and your past into purpose. That's how he's able to repurpose and reshape some of the regret, some of the hurt, some of the disappointment of your life. When you give him access to those stories, he will use them. He'll use your gifts and allow them to be showcased. So he took the pain of Claudia's past and he repurposed it. And she was obedient enough to use her gift of storytelling to in this generation, in this modern time where every 3 to 5 seconds something's coming at you, something's coming at you. She decided, and she was writing the paper at the time, and then being let go of was one of the best things that happened. And I used to be faithfully reading your column, wasn't I? I'd be like, huh, oh, man. But she wasn't let go because she wasn't talented or good.
Right.
It was a real reason that they had to let her go, which did not have anything to do with her ratings, her viewers, you know, or her listening people. But faith from failures, that's it. Faith from failures. That is a great phrase. When you can look up to God and know that he's going to use your pain and repurpose it into something in your future, it'll help you go through these challenging situations in life with grace. How do you carry grief gracefully? You smile all the way through, knowing that in the end, you win. So in her 5 minutes of faith segment, which is shown on a couple of different platforms, it's on your – share with them some of the platforms that you show it on.
Yeah, it's on YouTube, it's on Facebook, it's on LinkedIn, Twitter. I think that's all of them.
I'm going to put her – I've just put for some of the other listeners, I just put her information. Follow her, and you guys can catch up with her for that. I'm super excited because 5 minutes of faith have had these rich stories. One of the stories I'd just like for you to showcase, because I'm not going to showcase mine, because y'all got to tune in, lean in, and listen up on this Sunday, November the 4th, follower at Claudia Parker Portraits. And we also have the links on uptomeradio.com, up2meradio.com. You can go there to check the content out. And this show, of course, will broadcast again on iTunes. But one of the stories I just want you to briefly highlight for maybe 2 minutes, if you can, the young lady who was very decorated, and she was an atheist.
Oh, right. Christy Rutherford.
Christy Rutherford is one of the stories. Just give them some snippet tidbits of that to kind of wet their whistle for what they can get when they go and check you out.
Yeah, so Christy was the 13th African-American female commander in the Coast Guard in their whole however many hundreds of years the Coast Guard has been established. So she was a very high-ranking person in the Coast Guard. She had a six-figure salary. She was doing amazing. She was educated. But because of the climate in the Coast Guard, they didn't respect her. They were like, you can have whatever title, whatever kind of education, what kind of salary you want, but we're always going to look at you and let you know you don't belong here. So what happened with her is she had to change who she was so far from the core of her being and become this ridiculous, you know, cuss you out, open doors, kick the doors in, pound your fist on the table to get respect from her subordinates, that it put her into just this horrible place of stress, and she just had to just quit. She resigned. And she didn't know God. She was a full-blown atheist. But as she was in this wilderness position, she said, God started speaking to her. And she's like, somebody's speaking to me. I don't even know who that is. But she found God as a result of leaving that job. And in doing so, she begins to know who he is by watching television, TV. She was watching Joyce Meyer and Joel Osteen's and Bishop Jakes, and she starts to kind of hear from him through their sermons, and then she started to see God on her own. She accepted Christ, and then she goes to Harvard, and she becomes this leadership coach, and oh my gosh,
won't he do it?
There's not one thing that
won't
I don't know that Chrissy isn't doing. But now she's helping other executive C-suite level women that are in these high powerful positions deal with some of the same things that she did, but in a better manner.
Of course, because she has the. But that's a part of God doesn't waste one drop.
Right.
Had she not endured all of that, she wouldn't have been in a position to help other women get to the place where you do not redefine who you are based on a title that someone has given you.
Right.
You try to figure out a way to express who you are, expose who you are, live authentically.
Mm-hmm.
Authenticity is underrated in a lot
right.
of places. If you're authentic about your life and authentic about your intentions, generally you'll reap a bigger harvest than trying to pretend. If I try to pretend Claudia, I may be able to do it for a little while, but I'll never be as good as Claudia.
And I won't be as good as mine.
So no matter how hard you try to be somebody else's that people may think
sure.
you're supposed to be, you'll never be good at it. That's why I don't have to remember a lie. Because if I live who I am, I don't have to pretend to be somebody when I show up because I showed you somebody that I really wasn't.
Right.
I am who I am. What you see is what you get, right?
That's right.
This is who we are. And we're like this unapologetically, not because we're bold. It's no brag. It's just fact. And that means that when Daddy makes you and designs you uniquely, the way that he created you to be, don't make an excuse about it. Don't cower down behind it. Don't dull your shine. And Claudia and I, we walk in our sunshine. And that's not walking with our head up like, oh, we're all of that in a box of Krispy Kreme donuts because I happen to be hungry for something sweet right now. That just means that we know that us showing up fully and completely, boldly and courageously
right.
will empower someone else to walk in their truth, will encourage someone else to not shrink down behind the problems that they may have. So we hope that OMG, the Omar Gale Radio Show tonight, has been a blessing to you, because one of the reasons I wanted Claudia on the show is when life happens, she has chosen to live out loud.
Mm-hmm.
Life has happened to her from the tender age of 6, and how she has handled each of those roadblocks, each of those hurdles, each of those what could have been the things to take you out and definitely cause you to turn your back on Daddy. She says, no, I cling tight. I cling tighter. And that is an inspiration that anybody can benefit from. So if you've been blessed or you've been encouraged, I hope you share our podcast. Our podcasts are available on iTunes, Google Play, and the Stitcher app. And if you're watching on social media, we hope that you share this with your friends. Claudia, can you share with our listeners your handles for your social media page as well as your website?
Right.
And if they can purchase your book, where they might be able
yeah.
to get that.
The book, Becoming a Mother While Losing My Own, is on Amazon. It's at Walmart. I ran into it at Walmart. I was like, oh, my God. I'm at Walmart. I didn't even know. But, yeah, I'm on Twitter. I think it's Author C. Parker,
uh-huh.
I think.
What
I'm
are you
not,
on Facebook?
Not really on Twitter.
What's your
much.
Thing on Facebook?
It's Claudia Parker or at Claudia Parker Portraits.
Okay. And the website?
The website is ClaudiaParkerPortraits.com and also ClaudiaParker.net. That is where my personal testimony story is. But I want to say in closing mm-hmm. that when I learned that I had a child with special needs, the firstborn child didn't understand all the attention that was going away to the child that was with the disability because of her therapies and doctor's appointments. And she started to give us a hard time, and she became a hypochondriac. So mm-hmm. it was through her negative attention seeking that God told us to give her a proper platform for the attention she was seeking. And that's how she began speaking.
And became an author.
In the house of God.
Hallelujah.
Because we gave her the right place
they
for the right
it.
Attention. Yeah.
They rechanneled it. And that's a tip for anyone. If you find generally, I'll give you a brief story before we close out. When I was a little kid, I had a horrible memory. And so I channeled that into writing poems about history lessons. It was actually rap at the time. I would rap about history lessons. That was just my way of being able to remember the stuff that the teacher was trying to teach me. Fortunately for me, I had some teachers at Carver Area High School. Shout out to the school in Allgale Garden and the projects. fortunately for me, the teacher saw that there was a gift, and I ended up doing a rap album. It's called Get Live 83, and then was entered into a contest, and the contest was with Curtis Blow, and it paid my way to college. So that just goes to show you, if you rechannel that energy into something positive, mm-hmm. you too can prosper. This has been the OMG Omara Gale Radio Show. You can reach me on social media at Mara Gale, and my website is maragale.com, where you can pick up the STEM documentary, my book Beyond Blessed, or Ear Candy, my CD. But don't forget, this Sunday, November the 4th, tune in, Claudia Parker Portrait on Facebook,
yes.
and you can catch my story, which is My Rock Bottom Had a Rainbow. God bless you. Be encouraged. We'll see you soon.
Everyone likes to be heard and then listened to, so we want you to set your dial to OMG on Thursday at 7 o'clock p.m.